Farid did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In Finchley and Golders Green, qualified nurses stand ready to advance their training while hospital wards run short-staffed. The buildings that once trained clinical specialists sit empty, their car parks quiet where students once gathered.
My name is Farid. I'm 32, and I've spent the last 9 years watching the NHS strain under pressures that didn't need to exist. I grew up in Edgware, watching my father leave for night shifts at Heathrow, while my mother marked homework at the kitchen table. She was a teaching assistant. He loaded cargo planes. They both understood that work meant serving something larger than yourself. When I finished my nursing degree at Middlesex University in 2014, I knew I'd found my version of that service. I collect vintage medical equipment in my spare time. There's something peaceful about restoring a 1960s blood pressure cuff or calibrating an old stethoscope. These instruments were built to last, built to be repaired. You can take them apart, understand how they work, put them back together. They're honest machines. If they break, you can see why and fix it. The respiratory ward at Barnet Hospital became my home for 9 years. Through the pandemic, I watched colleagues leave for better pay elsewhere, while we covered more patients with fewer hands. By 2022, I was covering shifts that should have been split between three nurses. I wasn't bitter about it. The work mattered, but I knew I could contribute more with advanced training. In January 2023, I applied to become a clinical nurse specialist through the Royal Free London NHS Foundation Trust's internal progression scheme. The respiratory unit needed someone who could lead complex case management, someone who could bridge the gap between junior nurses and consultants. My application was accepted. The ward manager said I was exactly what they were looking for. Then I met with HR. Sarah, the workforce development manager, looked uncomfortable as she explained. The training budget has been frozen by NHS England pending Treasury spending reviews, she said. We want to put you through, but we can't access the funding right now. I asked when the freeze might lift. She didn't know. Maybe next financial year. Maybe the one after that. I contacted Health Education England directly. Dr. Ahmed, the training program manager, was frank with me. We have unfilled places on specialist nursing courses at UCL and King's College, he told me. The capacity exists, the lecturers exist, but trusts can't access funding to send people through. It's the same story across London. I asked if I could self-fund. He explained that specialist NHS training didn't qualify for standard student finance. The student loans company told me the same thing when I called them. These courses were designed to be funded through NHS budgets, not individual loans. I tried three different London trusts over the following months. The Royal Free, University College London Hospitals, and King's College Hospital. The conversation was identical every time. There is no funding. The training managers all said it with the same apologetic tone, as though they were describing a natural law rather than a budget decision. It sounded reasonable at first. Budgets are tight. The NHS is stretched. Everyone knows that. I accepted it the way you accept that it might rain. But in September 2023, I was walking through Elephant and Castle when I passed the old Health Education England building. The training centre signs were still visible through dusty windows. The car parks where students once gathered stood empty. I could see lecture halls through the ground floor windows. Chairs stacked, but still there. I stood outside that building for 20 minutes, trying to understand what I was seeing. The people who wanted training existed. I was one of them. Dr. Ahmed had told me about unfilled places at UCL and King's College. The lecturers existed. The lecture halls existed. The equipment existed. What exactly was it that there was no money for? I started asking different questions. The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend pounds that would connect qualified nurses to advanced training. That was a political decision, dressed as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, Whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available, they were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it. Except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still on the respiratory ward at Barnet Hospital. I still restore vintage medical equipment on weekends. But I understand now that what happened to me is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard is not bare. It was locked by choice.
What Farid experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. A false analogy compares two things that seem similar but work differently. Saying a goldfish bowl is like the ocean because both contain water ignores that one is a closed system and the other is not. The household budget myth is the same kind of false analogy. Every time someone told Farid there is no money, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. The fake experts in this case cite economists who insist that government spending must be rationed like household spending, that budgets must be balanced like a family's checkbook. They never name which economists or acknowledge that the profession is divided. When challenged on NHS funding, they deploy the standard objection. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. Which economists? The profession is split. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is sanitary real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Finchley and Golders Green, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Finchley and Golders Green ranks 275 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in the sixth decile, according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 1,390 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Local organisations received £26.1 million in total grants, according to 360, giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.